Yonder, said I, in the forest wanders the dreadful bear, fierce and menacing, and yet innocent in it. And I told him how once a bear came to a great saint who had taken refuge in a tiny cell in the wood. And the great saint pitied him, went up to him without fear and gave him a piece of bread. Go along, said he, Christ be with you, and the savage beast walked away meekly and obediently, doing no harm. And the lad was delighted that the bear had walked away without hurting the saint, and that Christ was with him too. Ah, said he, how good that is, how good and beautiful is all God's work. He sat musing softly and sweetly. I saw he understood. And he slept beside me a light and sinless sleep. May God bless youth. And I prayed for him as I went to sleep. Lord, send peace and light to thy people. Chapter 2, the duel. I spent a long time, almost 8 years, in the military cadet school at Petersburg, and in the novelty of my surroundings there, many of my childish impressions grew dimmer, though I forgot nothing. I picked up so many new habits and opinions that I was transformed into a cruel, absurd, almost savage creature. A surface polish of courtesy and society manners I did acquire together with the French language. But we all, myself included, looked upon the soldiers in our service as cattle. I was perhaps worse than the rest in that respect, for I was so much more impressionable than my companions. By the time we left the school as officers, we were ready to lay down our lives for the honor of the regiment, but no one of us had any knowledge of the real meaning of honor, and if anyone had known it, he would have been the first to ridicule it. Drunkenness, debauchery and devilry were what we almost prided ourselves on. I don't say that we were bad by nature, all these young men were good fellows, but they behaved badly, and I worst of all. What made it worse for me was that I had come into my own money, and so I flung myself into a life of pleasure, and plunged headlong into all the recklessness of youth. I was fond of reading, yet strange to say, the Bible was the one book I never opened at that time, though I always carried it about with me, and I was never separated from it. In very truth I was keeping that book for the day and the hour, for the month and the year, though I knew it not. After 4 years of this life, I chanced to be in the town of K, where our regiment was stationed at the time. We found the people of the town hospitable, rich, and fond of entertainments. I met with a cordial reception everywhere, as I was of a lively temperament and was known to be well off, which always goes a long way in the world. And then a circumstance happened which was the beginning of it all. I formed an attachment to a beautiful and intelligent young girl of noble and lofty character, the daughter of people much respected. They were well, too, the people of influence and position. They always gave me a cordial and friendly reception. I fancied that the young lady looked on me with favor and my heart was aflame at such an idea. Later on I saw and fully realized that I perhaps was not so passionately in love with her at all, but only recognized the elevation of her mind and character, which I could not indeed have helped doing. I was prevented, however, from making her an offer at the time by my selfishness. I was loath to part with the allurements of my free and licentious bachelor life in the heyday of my youth, and with my pockets full of money. I did drop some hint as to my feelings, however, though I put off taking any decisive step for a time. Then, all of a sudden, we were ordered off for 2 months to another district. On my return 2 months later, I found the young lady already married to a rich neighboring landowner, a very amiable man, still young though older than I was, connected with the best Petersburg society, which I was not, and of excellent education, which I also was not. I was so overwhelmed at this unexpected circumstance that my mind was positively clouded. The worst of it all was that, as I learned then, the young landowner had been a long while betrothed to her, and I had met him indeed many times in her house, but blinded by my conceit I had noticed nothing. And this particularly mortified me. Almost everybody had known all about it, while I knew nothing. I was filled with sudden irrepressible fury. With flushed face I began recalling how often I had been on the point of declaring my love to her, And as she had not attempted to stop me or to warn me, she must, I concluded, have been laughing at me all the time. Later on, of course, I reflected and remembered that she had been very far from laughing at me. On the contrary, she used to turn off any love, making on my part with a jest and begin talking of other subjects, but at that moment I was incapable of reflecting and was all eagerness for revenge. I am surprised to remember that my wrath and revengeful feelings were extremely repugnant to my own nature, for being of an easy temper, I found it difficult to be angry with anyone for long, and so I had to work myself up artificially and became at last revolting and absurd. I waited for an opportunity and succeeded in insulting my rival in the presence of a large company. I insulted him on a perfectly extraneous pretext, jeering at his opinion upon an important public event. It was in the year 1826. My jeer was, so people said, clever and effective. Then I forced him to ask for an explanation, and behaved so rudely that he accepted my challenge in spite of the vast inequality between us, as I was younger, a person of no consequence, and of inferior rank. I learned afterwards for a fact that it was from a jealous feeling on his side also that my challenge was accepted. He had been rather jealous of me on his wife's account before their marriage. He fancied now that if he submitted to be insulted by me and refused to accept my challenge, and if she heard of it, she might begin to despise him and waver in her love for him. I soon found a second in a comrade, an ensign of our regiment. In those days, though duels were severely punished, yet dueling was a kind of fashion among the officers, so strong and deeply rooted will a brutal prejudice sometimes be. It was the end of June, and our meeting was to take place at 7 o'clock the next day on the outskirts of the town. And then something happened that in very truth was the turning point of my life. In the evening, returning home in a savage and brutal humor, I flew into a rage with my orderly Afanasy, and gave him 2 blows in the face with all my might, so that it was covered with blood. He had not long been in my service and I had struck him before, but never with such ferocious cruelty. And, believe me, though it's 40 years ago, I recall it now with shame and pain. I went to bed and slept for about 3 hours. When I waked up, the day was breaking. I got up, I did not want to sleep any more. I went to the window, opened it, it looked out upon the garden, I saw the sun rising, it was warm and beautiful, the birds were singing. What's the meaning of it? I thought. I feel in my heart as it were something vile and shameful. Is it because I am going to shed blood? No, I thought. I feel it's not that. Can it be that I am afraid of death, afraid of being killed? No, that's not it, that's not it at all. And all at once I knew what it was because I had beaten Afanasy the evening before. It all rose before my mind, it all was, as it were, repeated over again. He stood before me and I was beating him straight on the face and he was holding his arms stiffly down, his head erect. His eyes fixed upon me as though on parade. He staggered at every blow and did not even dare to raise his hands to protect himself. That is what a man has been brought to, and that was a man beating a fellow creature. What a crime! It was as though a sharp dagger had pierced me right through. I stood as if I were struck dumb, while the sun was shining, the leaves were rejoicing and the birds were trilling the praise of God. I hid my face in my hands, fell on my bed and broke into a storm of tears. And then I remembered my brother Markel and what he said on his death bed to his servants, "My dear ones, why do you wait on me? Why do you love me? Am I worth your waiting on me? Yes, am I worth it?" flashed through my mind. After all, what am I worth, that another man, a fellow creature, made in the likeness and image of God, should serve me? For the first time in my life this question forced itself upon me. He had said, "Mother, my little heart, in truth we are each responsible to all for all, it's only that men don't know this. If they knew it, the world would be a paradise at once. God, can that too be false?" I thought as I wept. In truth, perhaps, I am more than all others responsible for all, a greater sinner than all men in the world. and all at once the whole truth in its full light appeared to me. What was I going to do? I was going to kill a good, clever, noble man, who had done me no wrong, and by depriving his wife of happiness for the rest of her life, I should be torturing and killing her too. I lay thus in my bed with my face in the pillow, heedless how the time was passing. Suddenly my second, the ensign, came in with the pistols to fetch me. "Ah," said he, "it's a good thing you are up already. It's time we were off. Come along." I did not know what to do and hurried to and fro undecided. We went out to the carriage, however. "Wait here a minute," I said to him. "I'll be back directly, I have forgotten my purse." And I ran back alone, to Afanasy's little room. "Afanasy," I said, "I gave you two blows on the face yesterday, forgive me," I said. He started as though he were frightened, and looked at me, and I saw that it was not enough, and on the spot, in my full officer's uniform, I dropped at his feet and bowed my head to the ground. "Forgive me," I said. Then he was completely aghast. "Your honor. Sir, what are you doing? Am I worth it?" And he burst out crying as I had done before, hid his face in his hands, turned to the window and shook all over with his sobs. I flew out to my comrade and jumped into the carriage. "Ready," I cried. "Have you ever seen a conqueror?" I asked him. "Here is one before you." I was in ecstasy, laughing and talking all the way. He looked at me. "Well, brother, you are a plucky fellow, you'll keep up the honor of the uniform, I can see." So we reached the place and found them there, waiting us. We were placed 12 paces apart. He had the first shot. I stood gaily, looking him full in the face. I did not twitch an eyelash. I looked lovingly at him, for I knew what I would do. His shot just grazed my cheek and ear. "Thank God," I cried, "no man has been killed," and I seized my pistol, turned back and flung it far away into the wood. "That's the place for you," I cried. I turned to my adversary. "Forgive me, young fool that I am, sir," I said, "for my unprovoked insults to you and for forcing you to fire at me. I am 10 times worse than you and more, maybe. Tell that to the person whom you hold dearest in the world." I had no sooner said this than they all three shouted at me. "Upon my word," cried my adversary, annoyed, "if you did not want to fight, why did not you let me alone? Yesterday I was a fool, too. Day I know better," I answered him gaily. "As to yesterday, I believe you, but as for today, it is difficult to agree with your opinion," said he. "Bravo," I cried, clapping my hands. "I agree with you there too, I have deserved it. Will you shoot, sir, or not?" "No, I won't," I said. "If you like, fire at me again, but it would be better for you not to fire." The seconds, especially mine, were shouting too, "Can you disgrace the regiment like this, facing your antagonist and begging his forgiveness? If I'd only known this." I stood facing them all, not laughing now. "Gentlemen," I said, "is it really so wonderful in these days to find a man who can repent of his stupidity and publicly confess his wrongdoing?" "But not in a duel," cried my second again. "That's what's so strange," I said. "For I ought to have owned my fault as soon as I got here, before he had fired a shot, before leading him into a great and deadly sin, but we have made our life so grotesque, that to act in that way would have been almost impossible, for only after I had faced his shot at the distance of 12 paces could my words have any significance for him, and if I had spoken before, he would have said, 'He is a coward. The sight of the pistols has frightened him, no use to listen to him.'" "Gentlemen," I cried suddenly, speaking straight from my heart, "look around you at the gifts of God, the clear sky, the pure air, the tender grass, the birds. Nature is beautiful and sinless, and we, only we, are sinful and foolish, and we don't understand that life is heaven, for we have only to understand that and it will at once be fulfilled in all its beauty. We shall embrace each other and weep." I would have said more, but I could not, My voice broke with the sweetness and youthful gladness of it, and there was such bliss in my heart as I had never known before in my life. All this is rational and edifying, said my antagonist, and in any case you are an original person. You may laugh, I said to him, laughing too, but afterwards you will approve of me. Oh, I am ready to approve of you now, said he, will you shake hands? For I believe you are genuinely sincere. No, I said, not now, later on when I have grown worthier and deserve your esteem, then shake hands and you will do well. We went home, my second upbraiding me all the way, while I kissed him. All my comrades heard of the affair at once and gathered together to pass judgment on me the same day. He has disgraced the uniform, they said, let him resign his commission. Some stood up for me. He faced the shot, they said. Yes, but he was afraid of his other shot and begged for forgiveness. If he had been afraid of being shot, he would have shot his own pistol first before asking forgiveness, while he flung it loaded into the forest. No, there's something else in this, something original. I enjoyed listening and looking at them. My dear friends and comrades, said I, don't worry about my resigning my commission. For I have done so already. I have sent in my papers this morning and as soon as I get my discharge I shall go into a monastery, it's with that object I am leaving the regiment. When I had said this every one of them burst out laughing. You should have told us of that first, that explains everything, we can't judge a monk. They laughed and could not stop themselves, and not scornfully, but kindly and merrily. They all felt friendly to me at once. Even those who had been sternest in their censure, and all the following month, before my discharge came, they could not make enough of me. Ah, you monk, #2019, they would say. And everyone said something kind to me, they began trying to dissuade me, even to pity me, what are you doing to yourself? No, they would say. He is a brave fellow. He faced fire and could have fired his own pistol too, but he had a dream the night before that he should become a monk, that's why he did it. It was the same thing with the society of the town. Till then I had been kindly received, but had not been the object of special attention, and now all came to know me at once and invited me, they laughed at me, but they loved me. I may mention that although everybody talked openly of our duel, the authorities took no notice of it, because my antagonist was a near relation of our general, and as there had been no bloodshed and no serious consequences, and as I resigned my commission, they took it as a joke. And I began then to speak aloud and fearlessly, regardless of their laughter, for it was always kindly and not spiteful laughter. These conversations mostly took place in the evenings, in the company of ladies. Women particularly liked listening to me then and they made the men listen. But how can I possibly be responsible for all? Everyone would laugh in my face. Can I, for instance, be responsible for you? You may well not know it, I would answer, since the whole world has long been going on a different line, since we consider the veriest lies as truth and demand the same lies from others. Here I have for once in my life acted sincerely and, well, you all look upon me as a madman. Though you are friendly to me, yet, you see, you all laugh at me. But how can we help being friendly to you? Said my hostess, laughing. The room was full of people. All of a sudden the young lady rose, on whose account the duel had been fought and whom only lately I had intended to be my future wife. I had not noticed her coming into the room. She got up, came to me and held out her hand. Let me tell you, she said, that I am the first not to laugh at you, but on the contrary I thank you with tears and express my respect for you for your action then. Her husband, too, came up and then they all approached me and almost kissed me. My heart was filled with joy, but my attention was especially caught by a middle-aged man who came up to me with the others. I knew him by name already, but had never made his acquaintance nor exchanged a word with him till that evening. He had long been an official in the town, he was in a prominent position, respected by all, rich and had a reputation for benevolence. He subscribed considerable sums to the almshouse and the orphan asylum. He was very charitable, too, in secret, a fact which only became known after his death. He was a man of about 50, almost stern in appearance and not much given to conversation. He had been married about 10 years and his wife, who was still young, had borne him 3 children. Well, I was sitting alone in my room the following evening, when my door suddenly opened and this gentleman walked in. I must mention, by the way, that I was no longer living in my former quarters. As soon as I resigned my commission, I took rooms with an old lady, the widow of a government clerk. My landlady's servant waited upon me, for I had moved into her rooms simply because on my return from the duel I had sent Afanasy back to the regiment, as I felt ashamed to look him in the face after my last interview with him. So prone is the man of the world to be ashamed of any righteous action. I have, said my visitor, with great interest listened to you speaking in different houses the last few days and I wanted at last to make your personal acquaintance, so as to talk to you more intimately. Can you, dear sir, grant me this favor? I can, with the greatest pleasure, and I shall look upon it as an honor. I said this, though I felt almost dismayed, so greatly was I impressed from the first moment by the appearance of this man. For though other people had listened to me with interest and attention, no one had come to me before with such a serious, stern, and concentrated expression. And now he had come to see me in my own rooms. He sat down. "You are, I see, a man of great strength of character," he said, "as you have dared to serve the truth, even when by doing so you risked incurring the contempt of all. Your praise is, perhaps, excessive," I replied. "No, it's not excessive," he answered. "Believe me, such a course of action is far more difficult than you think. It is that which has impressed me, and it is only on that account that I have come to you," he continued. "Tell me, please, that is if you are not annoyed by my perhaps unseemly curiosity, what were your exact sensations, if you can recall them, at the moment when you made up your mind to ask forgiveness at the duel? Do not think my question frivolous, on the contrary, I have in asking the question a secret motive of my own, which I will perhaps explain to you later on, if it is God's will that we should become more intimately acquainted." All the while he was speaking, I was looking at him straight into the face and I felt all at once a complete trust in him and great curiosity on my side also, for I felt that there was some strange secret in his soul. "You ask what were my exact sensations at the moment when I asked my opponent's forgiveness," I answered, "but I had better tell you from the beginning what I have not yet told anyone else." And I described all that had passed between Afanasy and me, and how I had bowed down to the ground at his feet. "From that you can see for yourself," I concluded, "that at the time of the duel it was easier for me, for I had made a beginning already at home, and when once I had started on that road, to go farther along it was far from being difficult, but became a source of joy and happiness." I liked the way he looked at me as he listened. "All that," he said, "is exceedingly interesting. I will come to see you again and again." And from that time forth he came to see me nearly every evening. And we should have become greater friends, if only he had ever talked of himself. But about himself he scarcely ever said a word, yet continually asked me about myself. In spite of that I became very fond of him and spoke with perfect frankness to him about all my feelings, for, thought I, what need have I to know his secrets, since I can see without that that he's a good man. Moreover, though he is such a serious man and my senior, he comes to see a youngster like me and treats me as his equal. And I learned a great deal that was profitable from him, for he was a man of lofty mind. "That life is heaven," he said to me suddenly, "that I have long been thinking about," and all at once he added, "I think of nothing else indeed." He looked at me and smiled. "I am more convinced of it than you are, I will tell you later why." I listened to him and thought that he evidently wanted to tell me something. "Heaven," he went on, "lies hidden within all of us. Here it lies hidden in me now, and if I will it, it will be revealed to me too, tomorrow and for all time." I looked at him, He was speaking with great emotion and gazing mysteriously at me, as if he were questioning me. And that we are all responsible to all for all, apart from our own sins. You were quite right in thinking that, and it is wonderful how you could comprehend it in all its significance at once. And in very truth, so soon as men understand that, the kingdom of heaven will be for them not a dream, but a living reality. And when, I cried out to him bitterly, when will that come to pass? And will it ever come to pass? Is not it simply a dream of ours? What then, you don't believe it, he said. You preach it and don't believe it yourself. Believe me, this dream, as you call it, will come to pass without doubt. It will come, but not now, for every process has its law. It's a spiritual, psychological process. To transform the world, to recreate it afresh, men must turn into another path psychologically. Until you have become really, in actual fact, a brother to everyone, brotherhood will not come to pass. No sort of scientific teaching, no kind of common interest, will ever teach men to share property and privileges with equal consideration for all. Everyone will think his share too small and they will be always envying, complaining and attacking one another. You ask when it will come to pass. It will come to pass. But first we have to go through the period of isolation. What do you mean by isolation? I asked him. Why, the isolation that prevails everywhere, above all in our age, it has not fully developed, it has not reached its limit yet. For everyone strives to keep his individuality as apart as possible, wishes to secure the greatest possible fullness of life for himself, but meantime all his efforts result not in attaining fullness of life but self, destruction, for instead of self, realization he ends by arriving at complete solitude. All mankind in our age have split up into units, they all keep apart, each in his own groove, each one holds aloof, hides himself and hides what he has, from the rest, and he ends by being repelled by others and repelling them. He heaps up riches by himself and thinks, how strong I am now and how secure, and in his madness he does not understand that the more he heaps up, the more he sinks into self-destructive impotence. For he is accustomed to rely upon himself alone and to cut himself off from the whole. He has trained himself not to believe in the help of others, in men and in humanity, and only trembles for fear he should lose his money and the privileges that he has won for himself. Everywhere in these days men have, in their mockery, ceased to understand that the true security is to be found in social solidarity rather than in isolated individual effort. But this terrible individualism must inevitably have an end, and all will suddenly understand how unnaturally they are separated from one another. It will be the spirit of the time, and people will marvel that they have sat so long in darkness without seeing the light. And then the sign of the Son of Man will be seen in the heavens. But, until then, we must keep the banner flying. Sometimes even if he has to do it alone, and his conduct seems to be crazy, a man must set an example, and so draw men's souls out of their solitude, and spur them to some act of brotherly love, that the great idea may not die. Our evenings, one after another, were spent in such stirring and fervent talk. I gave up society and visited my neighbors much less frequently. Besides, my vogue was somewhat over. I say this, not as blame, for they still loved me and treated me good, humoredly, but there's no denying that fashion is a great power in society. I began to regard my mysterious visitor with admiration, for besides enjoying his intelligence, I began to perceive that he was brooding over some plan in his heart, and was preparing himself perhaps for a great deed. Perhaps he liked my not showing curiosity about his secret, not seeking to discover it by direct question nor by insinuation. But I noticed at last, that he seemed to show signs of wanting to tell me something. This had become quite evident, indeed, about a month after he first began to visit me. "Do you know," he said to me once, "that people are very inquisitive about us in the town and wonder why I come to see you so often? But let them wonder, for soon all will be explained. Sometimes an extraordinary agitation would come over him, and almost always on such occasions he would get up and go away. Sometimes he would fix a long piercing look upon me, and I thought, he will say something directly now. But he would suddenly begin talking of something ordinary and familiar. He often complained of headache too.